7th, 2005, and ask for and they open a work session on House Bill 3481. Could I have a staff report, please?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I provided each of you with sort of an annotated version of the measure summary that I gave you a couple of days ago. It tries to indicate to you where the various provisions in House Bill 3484 came from. Most of them come from the package of bills that you've already heard dealing with biodiesel facilities. However, there are also provisions that have been placed in the bill that come from Senate Bill 736 and Senate Bill 890 and House Bill 2949. The bold material on the document indicates where a change, where an addition, subtraction, or change has occurred from the intent of the original bill that is being, whose provisions are being moved in here. So I'll just go through this real quickly. Sections 1 through 4 take all of the provisions of House Bill 3030 and move them into this bill. That bill dealt with expanding the existing local property tax exemption for certain types of fuel production facilities. The original bill focused on biofuel facilities. This bill would also add what I referred to as verified fuel additive production facilities. If you recall, early in the session, we got a presentation from a group of individuals from Southern Oregon who are developing what they hope will be a fuel additive that reduces emissions from both diesel and motor vehicle engines. What this bill would do would be to say if a fuel additive of that type were to go through a testing protocol from either the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency or the California Air Resources Board and be successful in completing that testing protocol, then a production facility for that kind of fuel additive would be eligible for this property tax exemption. Sections 5 through 10 of the bill largely come from House Bill 3031. The original bill would expand the existing pollution control income tax credit to include biodiesel production and processing facilities and equipment used in biodiesel processing or production or equipment used in the growing of crops that are harvested for biodiesel purposes. There would be two additions to that list of activities that would qualify for this exemption in this new bill. One would be farm storage facilities, and the other would be facilities using an open-loop biomass conversion plant to produce certain kinds of fuels or energy. An open-loop biomass would include things like forest material, thinnings, slash, brush, waste, and other byproducts from manufacturing activities. Sections 11 through 16 of the bill come from House Bill 3032. That is the bill which would establish an income or a corporate excise tax credit for producers of crops or feedstock that is used for biodiesel or ethanol production. The amount of the tax credit would be based on the number of gallons that the feedstock produces and would be 5 cents for each gallon of biodiesel and 4 cents for each gallon of ethanol. The bill, the new bill would also add to that a $20 per ton credit for biomass delivered to a producer that uses it to produce electricity, direct application heat, transportation fuel, or for anything else that would serve as a substitute for a petroleum-based product. The purpose here would be to encourage product or waste materials that might, for example, be left on the forest floor to be gathered and taken to a production facility where it could be used to produce some form of energy or transportation fuel. Sections 17 through 21 have their basis in House Bill 3035. This is the bill that dealt with providing grants for the retrofitting or replacement of buses to reduce their emissions. The funding would come from a newly created grant fund. The only thing that changes from House Bill 3035 is that the funding source in House Bill 3035, which was a surcharge on gasoline pumps, would be eliminated, and instead the fund would rely on federal funds or donations to fulfill the grant purposes of the bill. Just this morning, I received information indicating that the Federal Environmental Protection Agency has embarked upon a grant program for the purpose of providing funding for the retrofitting or replacement of buses to improve diesel emissions. They anticipate that there will be approximately 20 to 30 awards of approximately $200,000 to $300,000 available under this program. And like I say, they've just begun the application process for that program. So that may be a potential source of funding for this grant fund. Sections 22 through 26 of the bill come from Senate Bill 890, which is currently in the Senate Revenue Committee and is designed to provide research and development tax credits for activities related to alternative fuels or other alternative energy sources, for example, wind or solar. What the provisions in this bill do is they focus on establishing an income tax or corporate tax credit for persons that are conducting R&D activities for qualifying equipment that has a commercial application in the production of ethanol or biodiesel, ultra-low sulfur diesel, or the development of particulate traps relating to diesel-type engines. It would also apply to equipment that reduces bus tailpipe emissions. The amount that would qualify for this credit would be established by the State Department of Environmental Quality, and the tax credit would be 5% of that certified amount. And there is a limitation that the amount of credits offered to all taxpayers could not exceed $2 million under this program. Sections 27 and 28 deal with House Bill 2949, which is currently in the House Business, Labor, and Consumer Affairs Committee. The purpose of that bill and the purpose of these sections is to restrict certain types of gasoline additives, such as MTBE and certain types of oxygenates, to basically what amounts to trace amounts in gasoline. Some of these are produced through the natural production process of gasoline, and this would be simply designed to make sure that only trace amounts would occur in gasoline that was be sold in Oregon. Sections 29 through 31 come from Senate Bill 736 and would simply provide that biodiesel production facilities would be eligible for the same expedited site certificate review process that ethanol facilities are, and this would be designed to expedite or streamline the siting process for these kinds of facilities. And then lastly, sections 32 through 39 deal with changes in the state gas tax for vehicles using biodiesel fuel. Essentially, for each percentage point of biodiesel used in the fuel, the vehicle would be eligible for a reduction in the gasoline tax equal to 0.24 cents. So in other words, if you had a 10% diesel mix, you would get a 2.4 cent reduction in the gas tax that you would pay for using that kind of fuel. What this does not do is it does not take the provisions of House Bill 3034 that provided for a mandated percentage usage of biodiesel by state vehicles. It encourages them to use biodiesel, but it does not specify a mandated usage percentage. And just lastly, the bill does have a subsequent referral to the Revenue Committee.
Thank you very much, John. Would you repeat that?
After I catch my breath, Mr. Chair.
Without notes.
No fair.
I'd like to read a letter from Representative Kingfelder, who did a major job along with Representative Krupp in bringing this legislation to us, and I really appreciate all the work they have done. Representative Krupp will not be able to be here today, I don't believe, but nor Representative Dingfelder, but I ask them both to at least put down some of their thoughts. Dear Chair Anderson, members of the House Environment Committee, I'm writing to express my hesitant support of House Bill 3481, which consolidates the seven bills of the original biofuels package, which I co-sponsored with Representative Kropp, into a single bill. While this bill will continue to move many elements of the biofuels package forward, it contains a number of flaws and omissions from the original package that threaten the passage of the bill in the Senate. If enacted, these changes would undercut Oregon's overall commitment to jump-starting the biofuels industry in the state. The original biofuels package was a finely balanced compromise that offered a number of critical boosts to Oregon farmers and the fledgling biofuels industry. House Bill 3481 dismisses many of the elements of the Balancing Act. In my opinion, this recently crafted omnibus biofuels bill contains the following four major flaws. One, the bill drops the renewable fuel standard, a minimum required biodiesel and ethanol content in all diesel and gasoline sold in the state. Two, it removes the source of funding for the Clean School Bus Grant Fund. Three, it deletes the requirement that state government use biodiesel. And four, it expands the pollution control tax credit, which is widely criticized for paying companies to comply with the law and is completely unrelated to the rest of the legislation. The first three of these items were contained in the original package to promote a steady market for local biofuel producers. Biofuels is an up-and-coming industry. We know that the private industry will locate ethanol and biodiesel plants on the West Coast in the near future. The question is, in which state? If that state is to be Oregon, then the legislature must enact legislation to provide the right conditions for would-be biofuels growers and producers. From the industry's perspective, the single most important condition for a successful biofuels industry in Oregon will be a steady market for their products. The only way to guarantee this market is to implement a renewable fuel standard and to require state government use of these fuels. In conclusion, I support the passage of House Bill 3481 out of the House Environment Committee so that it may move on to the Senate, where I will work to fix the flaws that I have identified in this testimony. One side of the view. We have several folks that I have invited to testify before us today, and I think all are in favor. So let me call first Matt Blevins. Thank you, Matt.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
May I clarify, are we in public hearing?
We are in work session.
In work session.
With invited testimony.
But can I add one more thing?
Certainly.
You said the seven bills put it together. As I counted, it's the nine bills together.
You're right. We have 736 and 890 in there as well. So it is seven, the original seven plus two.
Chair Anderson, members of the committee, for the record, Matt Levins, Legislative Affairs Director with the Oregon Environmental Council. We come before you again with hesitant support for this new bill, 3481. I think in some ways will echo what Representative Dingfelder said about the bill. We would applaud the committee for continuing to take up this issue and continue to try to look at how we can move legislation forward this session to support the biofuels industry across the state of Oregon. We do believe that the original crafted package of bills that Representative Kropp and Representative Dingfelder, along with Senator Metzger and Senator Nelson, brought to this body were a finely balanced package that addressed a whole host of challenges facing the industry, both from production all the way through to demand and ensuring those issues are addressed. We still believe that those original bills were the best balancing act of legislation that can make it all the way through this process. We do think that this package has a lot of those, obviously, of those elements. We would encourage the committee to continue to look at those key issues that we think present some real challenges, particularly as this legislation moves forward and into the Senate. Again, we do feel very strongly that a renewable fuel standard is an important element in getting this industry off the ground. The U.S. Senate just two days ago endorsed an ethanol standard, again, showing that there is tremendous support across the board for this type of idea. We are concerned that with the establishment of the Clean School School Bus Grant Fund, without seed money in that fund, it is going to be very hard for us to secure federal funding that is in many cases looking for matches from states to show their commitment to that. So we would encourage you to, again, include some funding for that. We also think that the state can play a more aggressive role in helping to provide that demand for biodiesel and ethanol, and so we do think that a set mandate for state use is also an important part of this whole program. So, and then finally, we have real concerns about the dramatic expansion of the pollution control tax credit that's included in this legislation. We worked with this body and the governor's office in 2001 to refine and improve that law and strike a balance that helped to encourage companies to go above and beyond current state or federal law with their pollution control, and we believe that this these amendments that are included in this move us backwards on that, and again move us back towards paying companies to comply with state and federal law. So we look forward to working with the committee and members as this continues to work through, but at this point we would encourage you to move this out and see where we go from there.
Any questions of Mr. Blevins?
Mr. Chair, thank you. This is not a question for Matt, but in the staff manager summary, I can't actually find a reference to extending the pollution control tax credit sunset. I mean, I see in the bill that it looks like the sunset, which is right now December 31st, 2005, changes to 2016. That doesn't seem to be reflected in this staff manager summary.
I can add that if you'd like.
Yeah, I think that would be, I mean, it's a pretty significant feature of the bill. Thank
What's
you,
the citation
Chair.
For that?
That is in Section 7 of the bill on page 8, line 18.
Thank you.
Matt, you mentioned about the implementation of a percentage of biodiesel or diesel into the motor pool or state vehicles. That can be done by decree just by the governor himself. So it would be very simple for him, who seems to be very much in favor of this bill, to do.
Chair Anderson, members of the committee, yeah, that's correct. He can definitely do it, although we do believe it's more valuable for the state, for the legislative body to endorse him doing that, so that he's not acting on his own accord on that, and just to, again, to sort of show the support that is throughout the body for doing that. So, yes, he can do that, but we think it would be great to include that in this as well.
Thank you very much. Let me call Katie Fast and Brian Doherty. And John Ledger. Let me have John come forward, too. Katie, why don't you lead out?
Good afternoon, Chair Anderson and members of the committee. For the record, Katie Fast with the Oregon Farm Bureau Federation. I come today in support of 3481 from the Farm Bureau's perspective. This takes incentives for plant development, agriculture and timber producers, and incentives for the sale and marketing of biodiesel and ethanol in the state. In the bill, we see more market incentives than mandates, and there's still benefits to agriculture, to the bio industry, and then also to the timber industry. The addition of biomass in this package is important, and that came from testimony that you had on the original bills and was added into this package. I'm not going to go in. You've heard the benefits of biodiesel and renewable energy. For us, probably the four most important pieces of this is the extending of Oregon's property tax credit for ethanol plants, and then also including biodiesel into that as well. The expansion of pollution control tax credits to include biodiesel facilities in the production. We are also in support of extending the sunset on that as well. We are supportive of the producer tax credits for biodiesel production, ethanol production, and biomass. Those tax credits would be for the producer, not for the plant. So it's going to help the agriculture industry move into this market. Another highlight for us in this bill is exempting biofuel production facilities from the energy facility site certification requirements. So it allows these facilities to be streamlined through their siting requirements and get them developed. And that, what we're hearing, is a big deal for these companies looking at Oregon, is the passage of that section. I'd also like to ask for your support on the Dash 3 amendments that I think you all have. The Dash 3 allow or have the EQC, when they consider administrative rules, they shall ensure that the rules permit and encourage the sale or lease of new motor vehicles and new agricultural equipment that use biodiesel. And the importance of this is, as we start growing this market and this industry in the state, we need to ensure that we have the right regulatory climate to have biodiesel market here and be able to sell the engines to people that are going to buy biodiesel. And that's a concern that we're seeing in California with their diesel or anti-diesel regulations that they have now. There's not going to be a market for biodiesel in California in the next few years. And that's going to be impairing to the agriculture industry and then also to the car industry as well. So I ask for your support on the bill with the Dash 3s. We're also in favor of the Dash 1s, but Mr. Doherty will discuss those in more detail.
Okay, thank you. Any questions? Mr. Doherty.
Good afternoon, members of the committee. My name is Brian Doherty, and I represent the Western States Petroleum Association. I appreciate your consideration of this bill, and particularly Chair Anderson's work to create what I think is a very positive step in the right direction on these bills. With this bill and these amendments, my association is neutral on the bill, and we do offer some amendments to the bill, particularly to Section 27, which is dealing with the MTBE ban. I'd be glad to address that another time when you want to take up those amendments, but we have worked hard to work with these industries. I can tell you that our industry is the number one purchaser of ethanol in the world and will be the number one purchaser of biodiesel, as we'll be doing the majority of the blending, together with the jobbers from the Oregon Petroleum Association. So we're concerned, but we do want to have something that works. We want to make sure we have a blendable product that can work well with our product. And with that, I'd be glad to answer questions on the bill or talk to the Dash 1 amendments.
Let's ask Mr. Ledger to speak, and then we'll take questions.
Members of the committee, Mr. Chairman, John Ledger, AOI, and also I want to thank the chair for putting this together. We think this is a good package. We've had some concern, as many of you have, especially in the rural areas that really kind of went into a slump and never rebounded out of it, and we think this will be something that will help. I'm going to address just a couple of quick things because they were mentioned. One is on the pollution control tax credit. That was established by Tom McCall, and the idea then was Oregon has standards that are quite a bit more strict than required by the federal government. So that got put into place. In many states, that's illegal. They passed a law that says you cannot be more strict than federal minimums. That's common. Oregon didn't do that. We have a lot of rules that are, and actual whole programs that aren't required by the federal government, and we support those. And in return, we get the pollution control tax credit, which kind of helps take the edge off. It doesn't take a big piece of edge off, but takes a little of the edge off. And so that's been going along for years. And in a way, we kind of, you know, and perhaps we were inept in this, in that once the rules pass, they stay there forever, but the tax credit program has to be re-upped. So, of course, all these rules pass that the feds don't require, and then come in here and say, well, these, you know, you guys have to comply with the state rules anyway, so why do you need the tax credit? Well, that was kind of why we needed the tax credit. I would say, and I've held this argument out many times, that if this legislature would like to pass a law that says we cannot be more strict than federal minimums and at the same time abolish the pollution tax credit, we will jump on that in an instant. So that's what it does. It's kind of an offset for the extra things we do. And when someone might want to come into this area and they look at some of these programs and some of the regulatory things they're going to do here that they will not have to do or have to meet in some other states, this is something that gets them out it takes the edge off that. It's not going to take a lot, but it's some recompense for that. It does need to go out for a ways when it is extended, because if someone decides they want to build something like one of these facilities here, by the time they decide where they're going to site it, get the money, go through the permits, construct the thing, and then you can only apply for the credit after it's built, after you've hired people and built it, that's quite a ways in the future. So the credit really has to be out there a ways, so you know it's going to be there when you finally build and you apply. And so that's why it kind of needs to have this front end. But we think this is a good package. We like the pieces in it. There's a lot of things that are incentives. We're all for that. And we hope you'll pass this out.
Thank you. Questions?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I suspect this is addressed to at least two of you, at least Ms. Fass and Mr. Ledger. I don't know if Mr. Doherty wants to weigh in. But the two of you have said that the package in this bill provides incentives that will help grow this industry. And my question would be, how much will it help? And more specifically, whether either of you could give us an analysis of how many Oregon-based jobs we'd create for every $10,000 worth of tax expenditure in this bill.
Well, Mr. Chair, Representative Dolan, I don't know if anybody can tell you whether this entire package will create one plant. I mean, if you're looking for a guarantee that says if you pass this, you're going to get 8 plants, 10 plants, 0 plants, I don't think anyone can do that. I think all you can do is say if you make it more attractive, the likelihood is greater. It's just when you go to, like when you go to buy a house, the chances of you buying a house when you can get a loan or maybe write off more of your loan on your taxes, that increases the chances you're going to buy that house. But I don't think anyone can make a flat statement that if you pass this bill, it's going to get you so many thousand jobs.
And I'll address that, if I may, Chair Anderson, Representative Nolan. For the agriculture industry, the importance of the grower incentives in the bill is due to the fact that canola and some of the other products that are used to produce biodiesel and ethanol are lower value crops. We're probably going to see them grown in eastern Oregon. To encourage people to try these crops and get them going, the tax incentive is important. And we've done some analysis on it. It really doesn't equal out to that many dollars. I think it's around $20 an acre for producers, less than that on what they're going to be getting a tax credit. And then also for the agriculture industry, to utilize a tax credit, you need to be making a profit. And that's a challengeable thing in these days as well. But for us, ethanol and biodiesel are going to be purchased in Oregon. With this bill or without, there's an interest from the consumers to purchase it. And either we can ask the industry to come here, give them help to develop, and have those jobs in Oregon, or we can continue to import it in. And that'll continue to happen. And that would continue to happen if we had a mandate or not have a mandate or have the incentives or not have the incentives. So we'd like to look at bringing it to Oregon. And I think those are maybe some of the questions that if this bill moves to revenue, that revenue will address as well.
I might follow up.
Mr.
Ledger, I'm not looking for a guarantee. Let me phrase the question a little differently. How many jobs do you think we ought to get in any kind of tax expenditure that's designed to promote economic development?
I mean,
that's the purpose of the tax incentive, to promote an industry. What do you think the right balance is for every $10,000 worth of tax expenditures? How many jobs should we be aiming to get without expecting a guarantee?
Mr. Chair, Representative Nolan, I really couldn't give you an answer to that because I haven't looked at it in that sense. I can tell you, if you pass this with a tax credit in it and nobody builds anything, you haven't lost anything.
Mm-hmm.
if they do build something, you've got some people supporting families and paying income tax. The tax credit is pretty small, the pollution control tax credit, especially when you see the total amount spread out over the entire state. So I think the theory is almost like, well, if you pass this and it has a credit and nobody builds anything, how many jobs have you lost or not gained? I think if it works at all, you're going to be gaining quite a bit, because otherwise the facility wouldn't be there.
I think we'll hear some other testimony on that question.
We probably will. This is a conundrum, because if the tax credit is so small as to not be measurable, then it's hard for me to imagine that it is big enough to motivate the kind of behavior we want to motivate.
Mr. Chairman,
you've got to have a certain critical mass to motivate the behavior. And if it's big enough to motivate the behavior, it's probably big enough for us to...
Mr. Chair, Representative Nolan, it's part of a mix. And if you look on, for instance, the State Economic Development website, on their front page, I believe, there's a link and it says why you should come to Oregon, bring your business. You click on that and pollution control tax credits is listed. You go to just about any state in the union and you click on their economic development page, pollution control tax credits or something broader is listed. It's a piece. And when a company looks to locate somewhere, they'll locate there for a lot of reasons. And certainly a big one is financial. And this is one of them. This is one of them. I don't know if you can break it out in theory and get a number for that. I know you can say that, you know, if nobody builds this, if they don't come, you don't gain anything. If they do come and use the credit, then you've gained quite a bit.
Thank you all for coming.
Thank you. Thank you.
Really appreciate your input, not just today, but over the last 2 months or so.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to call Larry Stevens from OBEC or Al Hertz, either. Really appreciated having a chance to talk with you both over the last month or so, and being probably the most... closest to actually citing here, and also having probably, I think, the best pro forma and plan for action. Really appreciate having you come today.
Great. Thank you. Chair Anderson and committee members, my name is Larry Stevens with OBEC, Oregon Biofuel Engineering Company, and we're in the process now of siting a facility in Portland, probably in the final phases, hoping to break ground in September. And really, as my company... we support the 3481 to come out as it is, because we understand that it's going to go to the Senate, and there's a lot of people on both sides of the aisle that want this and want that. And I think once we get it out of committee, we can work that out. Our position is the most important point is the siting. We need to have the siting in order to put the plant here. And so 736 would come out by itself or in the bill. If it comes out in the bill and we have to stand with it, we need the emergency clause in 3481 so we can cite immediately. I'd be happy to answer any of your questions about jobs or anything like that.
Please, give us a general idea.
Okay. For our facility, you're looking at 90 jobs in Portland. The economic revenue is about $300 million a year. There's two facilities that will be in place. The outside market's going to dictate where we sell our product to, not specifically a mandate. Our business plan does not have a mandate in it for ourselves. For the smaller producers to build a plant, to bring a 1 or 3 million gallon plant on board, yes, they need a market to sell into. They have a smaller niche that they have to go into. So the way 3481 is written now, it does bring a lot of incentive to place a plant here. Our investments banker has looked at the way 3481 is written and done an analysis on it. Is it feasible for us to put it here, or do we go to the other place that we had cited? And they said this would be fine. This would stand the way it is from their economic standpoint.
There would be jobs involved in construction.
Yes.
You're talking about a $180 million facility?
Yes. And there's roughly speaking about 1,400 short-term jobs. Capital infusion, $180 million within the first year. followed within second year, you've got about roughly $300 million in tax revenue for the state. And total employment coming out of the second year is 169. Going into the third year is 260.
Which closely parallels the amount we're spending on OTEA.
Yes.
This year. Bill?
Al Herbst, Oregon Biofuel Engineering. Chair Anderson, and I don't know if we're speaking directly to Representative Nolan here on this issue, but I think that the mandates and so forth, one of the characteristics of that is if there's a concern relative to, you know, if we mandate it, will we have product to fulfill the need? The answer is yes, we'll have that product. So we're looking at it from if there's a concern on your side about mandating something that we can't get or have to get out of state, or if you need to put provisions in there, we will have the product available for that.
Thank you. Okay.
Mr. Chair?
Senator Dan.
Yes, I have a question concerning the if this House Bill 3184 doesn't do the job, what other incentives we need to give to come the company to look at our state other than the site issue? This bill is talking about the property tax exemption, income tax exemption, and corporate exercise tax exemption, and plus others. What other incentives we need to do it?
If you look at it from a strictly business standpoint and a business model in itself, like any company, if you were to ask, let's say if you were to ask another company to come into the state of Oregon, say a shoe company, would then the state run out and automatically say, let's have a mandate so that everybody buys their shoes? I mean, that just, to me, doesn't really make sense. So the way 3481 stands right now, on a pure business standpoint, it should give enough incentives for people to buy. And, you know, if you look at the petroleum industry in itself, they're not opposing biodiesel. I think if you were to look and ask what the question is what kind of biodiesel are they getting in order to blend? I think 3481 as it stands should be taken out of committee and let it go and move it through to the Senate and work it out of the Senate and bring it forward. You've got to have the incentive to build here, and that's the first step. For us, 736 is the most important, is deciding build. I wish I could give you a crystal ball. I don't know. I can't give you anything above that. The way we read the bill right now, it should be enough incentive. It would be enough incentive for us to come here.
Okay. Thank you.
Can I just clarify that?
Mm-hmm.
Did you say that the siting is the most important piece for you, and that enough would be incentive enough for you to locate your plant here?
3481, the way she stands right now, would be enough for us to put in Oregon. And it may be because we're Oregonians, too. But as far as 3481 goes, sits, we would still build here, except for the emergency clause in 3481. See, what happened here is we had 736, and it was rolled into 3481. And the way 3481 is written right now, there is not an emergency clause. So we would have to wait. Once 3481 came through the Senate, got passed, we would still have to wait now before we could get any exemption on our siting. And so we're pushed out another 3, 4, 5 months by the time we get done with this before we could site. So for us, if 3481 doesn't have an emergency clause in it that will let us take it, then we need to move 736 out of the committee so we can take that separately out of 3481 so it doesn't slow us down. And that's what we're looking for.
Thank you very much. We are in a work session, and I'm open to a motion on the amendments.
Mr. Chair, I move the dash one amendment to House Bill 3481.
Representative Jensen moves the dash one amendment on 3481. Any discussion?
Can you just clarify which amendments we're moving?
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I'm not, I have to say, familiar with the amendment. It would be very useful to me
have an explanation of what that, how that's different in the bill.
All right. Would Brian, why don't you come up and...
Chair Anderson, members of the committee, I did not explain the Dash 1 amendments, and I'm happy to do so now. There are approximately 20 states in the United States that have banned MTBE and other alcohol, heavy alcohols and ethers, which are listed here. The minor amendments we changed are on line 6, we changed from alcohol to ethanol. This still allows ethanol, as we're using Oregon and elsewhere, to be used, but that's the proper language, at least as it conforms to many other states. What we're doing here is some conforming language that is consistent with most of the other states that have banned MTBE and other items. The second item is we changed the concentration of MTBE on line 10 and 11 from 3/10 to 5/10. It actually in the original bill was, which was House Bill 2949, was 6/10. Most of them are at 5/10 in most states. So what our industry has said, let's try and make this consistent. The last piece that we've added is on page 2, lines 1 through 8, and this is allowing transshipment, which again is in the bills in most of the states, Arizona and California, Washington, those areas. And it just says that if they're going to transship this through the state, it wouldn't be banned. But we don't use it in the state. And that, I want to let folks know, we are not blending any MTBE in Oregon or Washington. It's banned in the Olympic Pipeline. It's banned in Washington. It's banned in California. So this makes the language of the bill consistent with bans in other states.
Representative Barnard.
Thank you. A couple of questions, if I may. I'm not as familiar, perhaps, with this whole topic area as I ought to be, so I'm going to ask some 101 questions, if that's okay.
That may be as deep as I can get.
Are other forms of alcohol, other than ethanol, used for blending with gasoline? Or is this the only form that is used for blending?
Chair Anderson, Representative Barnhart, these, if you're talking about the items down here that neither of us can pronounce...
No, I'm looking at line 6 of the amendment, and line 30 on page 15 in the bill, where you've substituted the word ethanol for alcohol.
Yes. Would you like to explain why we're doing that? If you leave the word alcohol in, you have an inconsistency between section 1A and section 3. Because you have other alcohols there that then could somehow come in because they would meet some standard. The reason we have these other items in Section 3, in Section C here, 1C, is they all have properties that are consistent and similar with MTBE in the way they react in groundwater. And the issue about these bans is that these have, they permeate soil and get into groundwater very quickly. These others, this does not, the way it's worded in the others is to have an ethanol that is not approved falls into these same categories.
Thank you. May I ask a question on a slightly different topic? Thank you, Mr. Chair. You were very careful to talk about methyl tertiary butyl ether and apparently a change in volume from 0.3% to 0.5% in this bill. What was the amount that was being used in California and other places when it was regularly used as an additive?
Chair Anderson, Representative Barton, somewhat less than 10%. And I say that it had a blend
of the alcohol?
10% of the total gallon being used. So far greater than this, 20 times greater than this.
Mm-hmm. All right, we have a motion for Dash 1 amendments. Any objections? Hearing none, clerk will call the roll.
Representative Nolan?
Yes.
Representative
Glenn?
Aye.
Representative Berard?
Aye.
Representative Barnhart?
Aye.
Representative Jensen?
Aye.
Chair Anderson?
And Sheriff Woods, aye. Dash 1 amendments are approved.
Okay.
I move the batch three amendments to House Bill 3481.
All right. Do we have any questions on the dash threes?
Nope.
I think same question, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Katie, would you like to step forward again? This had to do with the not only vehicles but also other agricultural equipment, irrigation pumps.
Yeah.
Use.
For the record, Katie Fast, Oregon Farm Bureau Federation. This amendment, the intent of this amendment is that as the commission adopts rules on engine sales, that those rules do not impair the sale of engines that use biodiesel. And the concern is coming out of rules that we've seen adopted in California that will phase out their diesel market and biodiesel market with the sale of vehicles and also agricultural equipment.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mm-hmm. Before we move on in this, I'd like to just enter into the testimony a letter from Randy Tucker, Legislative Affairs Manager for Metro, who says, I'm writing to express support of the Metro Council for the provisions found in Section 2728 having to do with gasoline additive restrictions, basically supporting the ban on MTBE and other ethers and heavy alcohols. We'll enter that into the testimony. All right. Any further questions or objections? Thank you. All right. Hearing none, we'll call a roll with Clerk Colerole.
Representative Nolan?
Yes.
Representative Lynn?
What are we doing?
Dash
three.
Dash three.
Dash three.
Okay. Aye.
Representative
Rosenbaum?
Aye.
Representative Berard?
Aye.
Representative
Barnhart?
Aye.
Representative Jensen?
Aye.
Chair Anderson?
And Chair votes aye as well. Dash three amendments are accepted. Approved.
Chair, I move House Bill 3481 as amended to the House Revenue Committee for recommendation.
Chair, Representative Jensen moves House Bill 3481 to the Revenue Committee without recommendation. Any questions?
Discussion?
Yes.
Mr. Chair, I think there are some very good elements in this bill, and I would add my voice to those who have congratulated you on bringing it together. And I do think there are some questions about it, and I will support the motion because it's without recommendation. I'd like to be able to support the bill, but until we know how much we're paying for the benefits that we're getting, I think it's premature for us to decide whether it's a good enough deal. But to move it along and keep this process going forward, I'll support the motion.
I would say that Representative Nolan and I have talked about even moving this, trying to get the revenue recommendations on the Senate side to be able to move this along forward a lot faster, but that really isn't going to work out, so we will move in this direction. Representative Barnhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would like to add my congratulations to those offered by others and by Representative Nolan for this bill. I will say, however, I do not believe that the materials that refer to the extension of the pollution control tax credit really belong in this bill. I think that a very serious conversation needs to be held about that extension, and it ought to be done in separate legislation, because it really muddies the waters when we deal with that, in addition to all of these other really good ideas that will move things along. I'm concerned about the issues raised by Representative Dingfelder in her letter that the chair was so kindly read to the committee. I'm very concerned about the lack of the clean school bus grant fund. We know that diesel pollution from school buses is a significant pollutant for children and affects children's health. I'm concerned about the deletion of the requirement that state government use biodiesel. I know we've heard testimony today that this will not affect the plant that's being built in Portland, but that doesn't mean it won't affect some other construction and having the state help incentivize the development of biodiesel would be, I think, extremely useful for Oregon as a bootstrap, as a way of getting us started in production, which ultimately will stand the state in very good stead as we're exporting biodiesel to other places. And a decision on the part of the state government to provide a ready market may actually increase the likelihood of us getting these kinds of production facilities here. And I'm very concerned about issue number one, the standards that Representative Dingfelder refers to. Now, having said that, I'm also in favor of moving the bill along in hopes that my comments and others will lead to appropriate amendments along the way so that we can get to a bill that I can support either on the floor this time or as it comes back from the Senate with amendments. And so I will vote in favor of the motion. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
All right. Clerk will call a roll.
Good evening, Mr. Chair.
Excuse me.
The motion is to send to the revenue without recommendation.
That's correct.
Okay.
Representative Nolan?
Yes.
Representative Lynn?
Aye.
Representative Rosenbaum?
Aye.
Representative Berard?
Aye.
Representative Barber?
Aye.
Representative
Hickson?
Aye.
Chair votes aye. House Bill 3381 has been passed. 3481, excuse me. 3481 has been passed and moved to the Revenue Committee. I'll close the work session on 3481 and open a work session on H.R. 3. We have a staff report.
Mr. Chair, this is a House resolution that would prohibit state agencies from taking any action with regard to the reduction of greenhouse gases unless that action is specifically authorized either by state or federal law.
All right. Thank you very much. We're in work session, and I will... We've had our hearing. I'm going to accept a motion to move.
Mr. Chair, I'll move up. Resolution 3 to the floor with DuPont's recommendation.
All right. Representative Jensen moves H.R. 3 to the floor with the DuPont's recommendation. Any discussion?
Mr. Chair, a couple questions, and I guess it's a staff or a chair or the committee as a whole. I wanted to clarify that this resolution is really just about expressing House opinion or preference for how state agencies conduct work or pursue their missions. Is that what
it's essentially doing? Saying that the state should leave the federal policies alone and not try and supersede or do an end run around federal policies, which basically were voted in by the Senate, I believe it was 98-0, and supported by our two last presidents, president and last.
Mm-hmm. And
so it's a resolution.
If I might just make a couple comments then.
Sure.
Seems to me that this committee has we've had hearings on this, and part of what we've heard in this discussion is a lot about both health effects that may or may not be attributable to environmental conditions, part of which are related to greenhouse gases or other things, and also some of the economic effects of actions by state agencies. Some of those things affect people as individuals, certainly the economic impacts, the fiscal impacts. Some of them affect families. Some of them affect business as a whole, and I think that there are more important things that this committee or this legislature could be doing to address things around protecting people's health and protecting their pocketbooks or their financial security. Things that come to mind that we could be doing would include addressing their health through making health care more accessible and affordable, protecting their ability to protect their families' financial security. And I'm concerned about our spending staff time, committee time, floor time, expressing a House opinion that does not have the force of law when there are other more pressing things that the voters expect us to do to help them deal with protecting their health, having access to prescription drugs, for example, in an affordable way, other things that we could be doing that I think would actually have an impact on the lives of Oregonians that I don't think this resolution comes close to doing.
Thank you very much. I carried a resolution just a week ago on recognizing a former member, and I don't think that really does much for present time other than maybe a little respect, but I think this also conveys respect. Representative Barnard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Resolutions like this are really expressions, I think, of, as I understand them at least, of a sense of the House. I don't understand them to have any kind of binding effect on anybody. If I were in another place, I might refer to them as pious expressions of hope, or impious ones, depending upon how you review them. If we were going to spend a lot of time on House resolutions, it might be more appropriate to adopt resolutions that would do things like encourage Congress to keep our jet airplanes in Portland, keep the airbase in Portland open, which would be a very valuable thing to us in the event we ever got attacked from across the Pacific Ocean. Might be useful for us even to admonish ourselves and other committees that we ought to take time to notify public about work sessions that are being held on budget bills, that so that people could actually benefit from being able to attend those kinds of sessions. Those would be higher priorities for me, Mr. Chair, than a vote on than passing out a resolution like this one. And I appreciate your indulgence in letting me make those comments.
I appreciate the comments. I think the sooner we move, the less time we'll spend on it.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I might say that a couple of the issues, I think that the administration, just as a side issue that you brought up, is worried about the safety of our fleet of airplanes and attack airplanes and is moving them for our own safety. So hopefully that will work to all of our better interests. We have a motion, and
Mr. Chair, can I make one comment?
Certainly.
In the House and Senate, we pass resolutions. Doesn't much effect on the federal government, but still we pass a lot of them.
I got it.
I think sometimes it's not appropriate. But as for this HR 3, and I'm going to support the pass out from this committee, but I do have a reservation otherwise at the floor.
Understood.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I got a comment. When we're talking about airplanes in Portland, Kingsley Field, located in Klamath Falls, Oregon, is looking to see 300 to 400 new support people at Kingsley Field as it expands the F-15 training facility. So we're sorry. There's winners and there's losers.
Clerk will call the roll.
Excuse me, Mr. Chair. One final comment. Now that everybody else has commented, I don't know how we got so far afield, but I just want to say that I will be voting against this because I don't agree with the sentiment it expresses, not for any of these other reasons that have been expressed, but my constituents, and I think the majority of Oregonians, really do believe that greenhouse gas emissions and the threats to our atmosphere and to our environment at every level are really, I think, one of the most serious global threats that we're facing now as citizens of the planet, and that I don't think people elected us and sent us here to say we just aren't going to do anything until the federal government requires it. I think that we do need to take this on as a serious problem and be flexible and willing to address it as new research and evidence crops up, and therefore I simply disagree with it, and that's why I will not support it today.
Thank you, and I appreciate the opinion. I think you know my opinion, that the reason we had a hearing up at Portland State was because I'm not so sure we're hearing both sides scientifically. Representative Nolan alluded to that. And I think I really honestly believe that if both sides, the science on both sides, were made clear to the people of Oregon, there would be a very, very close lineup in terms of numbers on both sides. Right now, I don't think it is that way, but I'm not sure, and I personally believe that the media has not fairly broached the subject on both sides of the matter. The clerk will now call the roll.
Representative Lynn?
Aye.
Representative Rosenbaum?
No.
Representative Gerard?
Aye.
Representative Barnhart?
I'm voting no for the reasons expressed by Representative Nolan. Or, excuse me, Representative Rosenbaum.
Wait. Representative Jensen?
Aye.
Representative Nolan?
No.
Chair Anderson?
Chair votes yes. The motion for H.R. 3 has carried, and I would suggest we take that to the consent calendar. Do I hear any objections?
It's not that late in the day, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair, I'm...
Oh, we can't. That's
we
right.
We can't.
All right. I will carry that.
Mr. Chair, I'll serve notice of a possible minority report.
Okay. All right. We'll close the work session on H.R. 3, and we'll move to Senate Bill 736. We'll open a work session on 736. I have the staff report.
Mr. Chair, this bill has already been referenced earlier today. It would expand the current exemption from certain state agency facility site certificate requirements to include biodiesel production facilities that specifically would use waste cooking oil, oil seeds, or cellulosic biolose such as grass straw as a feedstock. The bill does have an emergency clause and would take effect upon passage.
All right. I'll accept a motion to on Senate Bill 736.
Mr. Chair, I move that Senate Bill 736 be referred to the State and Federal Committee.
All right. Any objections? Any discussion?
Well, I simply note, Mr. Chair, that this committee has yet to meet except for organizing this session, and I think that those watching on the Internet and those in the audience need to know that this probably means it's probably the same as simply voting the bill down. I don't know that for a fact, of course, but that's probably what it means. I do recall a testimony we heard in connection with the bill that we heard originally, House Bill 3481, in which the those who were planning to build a plant in Portland were desirous of this bill because of the emergency clause it contains. I suspect I'll be a no vote, Mr. Chair, on the motion.
All right. The intent here is that the committee is very much interested in the bill, is looking at any possible fiscal help that they can give and to this whole citing of activity, and that it would just be a stimulus to move 3481 along faster, not only in the House but also in the Senate. So I think your fears are can be allayed.
On discussion.
Yes.
Mr. Chair, we just had a lengthy discussion, and we've had previous hearings on the value of this element of House Bill 3481. Testimony that this is a key piece to bringing a particular economic asset to Oregon, and I think it's right to be passed to the floor. I don't think it needs to go to another committee. I'll oppose referring it to another committee. I think we ought to send it to the floor.
All right. Thank you.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Representative Rosenbaum.
I just will say that this bill will be joining many of my own bills in the State and Federal Affairs Committee, and although I would love to think that all those bills were sent there because the committee was very interested in them, my experience has been that the committee has not met and that bills generally go there and we don't ever hear of them again. And so I would have a concern that the bill would be basically sent to Diane. I don't want to see that happen, so I will have to vote no as well.
Having had a very warm discussion, very nice discussion with the chair of that committee, I do not have the same fears that you do. Any further discussion? Hearing none, let's have the clerk call the roll.
No.
Representative Berard?
Aye.
Representative Barnhart?
No.
Representative Jensen?
Aye.
Representative Nolan?
No.
Aye.
Chair Anderson votes aye. The Senate Bill 736 is moved to the State and Federal Affairs Committee. All right, I'll move to open a work session on House Bill 3328. We have before us some Dash 5 amendments, and we have the staff report.
Mr. Chair, the committee has held lengthy hearings on this bill. It would the original bill would basically require the State Department of Energy to examine ways to reduce peak and overall energy usage in state-owned and or funded buildings and school district buildings. The department would be required to conduct comprehensive and customized energy audits. And identify potential upgrades to reduce energy usage and realize energy savings. And based on the findings, then the department would prepare a revenue-neutral plan for increasing energy efficiency and the use of renewable energy sources. You have received amendments. There are also provisions in the bill that would require the use of apprenticeship programs with regard to performance of the work that would be identified as a result of the work of the department. The committee has received two principal sets of amendments dealing with the bill, the Dash 5 amendments, which would eliminate the references to the apprenticeship program. It would also eliminate the provision of the bill that would allocate $100,000 for the purpose of conducting the work, but it would further require that the audit work that would be done only to the extent that funds are available to perform that work. The Dash 6 amendments deal with a separate subject dealing with energy performance savings contracts and how those matters would be handled under the state's public contracting law.
All right.
Mr. Chair.
I'm going to stand at ease for just a moment until we can invite Mr. Kapoor, who would like to come. He's in, we're in C, he's in B, I believe, or D, I believe.
Something's going to get him.
Stand at ease. Move.
Mr. Chair.
Yep.
I would move. Move the Dash 4 amendments to House Bill 3328.
Thank you. Representative Jensen moves the Dash 4 amendments, which, let's just review that. Amendments to House Bill 3328. Would you just explain what we both talked about, Representative Barber?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. In our testimony the other day, Representative Witt talked about the need to remove the word on-site in line 7 on page 2. This amendment does that along with two other amendments, along with two other changes in lines 9 and 10. If we pass the Dash 4s and then pass the Dash 5, the Dash 5s very neatly deletes lines 9 through 11 on page 2, thus getting rid of the rest of the amendments that were contained in the Dash 4s. The effect, if we do those two things, is to remove the one word online in the Dash 4 amendments, and then all the changes that would take place in accordance with the Dash 5s.
All right.
And, Mr. Chair, if I might, just the removing on-site from Line 7 merely makes the application, the maximum amount, more general in the than it would with the on-site in there.
Excellent. Any other discussion? Objections? Clerk, call the roll.
Representative Berard?
Aye.
Representative Bartman?
Aye.
Representative Jensen?
Aye.
Representative Nolan?
Yes.
Representative Lentz?
Aye.
Representative Rosenbaum?
Aye.
Chair Anderson?
Chair votes aye. The dash fours have been moved to House Bill 3328. Representative Jensen?
Mr. Chair, I move the dash five amendments to House Bill 3328.
Representative Jensen moves the dash five amendments to House Bill 3328. Do I hear any discussion or objections? Mm-hmm. Clerk will call roll.
Representative
Gerard?
Aye.
Representative Barnhart?
Aye.
Representative Jensen?
Aye.
Representative
Nolan?
Yes.
Representative
Lynn?
Aye.
Representative Rosenbaum?
Aye.
Chair Anderson? Chair votes aye. The dash 5s have been moved to House Bill 3328. We have a, with the amendments, we are also going to rescind the referral to Ways and Means and make a subsequent referral to the Budget Committee. Chair Representative Jensen.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 3328 to the floor and rescind the referral to the Ways and Means Committee and with a subsequent referral to the House Budget Committee.
Representative Jensen moves House Bill 3328 as amended with a due pass to the floor and subsequent rescinding of the referral to the Ways and Means Committee and referral to the Budget Committee. Any discussion?
Mr. Chair,
not to the floor.
Could I just...
To the committee.
Could I just ask a question of why does this have a fiscal impact at this point? Or
it did at one point. It does not, as far as we know, at this point.
That would be correct.
So why would it need to go to the Budget Committee then, instead of the
Board? Well, Mr. Chair, Representative Rosenbaum, the issue for this committee at this point in the session is that the way the process works is we need to get prior approval from the Speaker's office in order to rescind a subsequent referral of this type. And the question would be, then it would have to come back to the committee and be passed out of the committee with us. And the question would become if or when this committee is going to meet again beyond this point in the session. At this point, we have no additional meetings scheduled, although obviously the committee could be reopened at any time for business. But at this point, we might not have another meeting at which we could come back and repass out the bill without the referral.
Mr. Chair, didn't you say we're going to meet at least one more time?
We may have to. I'm not sure. I haven't seen the bill yet. See what it is.
We did receive a bill.
It's a pesticide usage bill, but I haven't really had a chance to look at it or see it. We have a motion, and I'm going to read it as House Bill 3328 as amended for the due pass, rescinding referral to Ways and Means and a subsequent referral to the Budget Committee. Clerk will call the roll.
Representative Gerard?
Aye.
Representative Barnhart?
Aye.
Representative Jensen?
Aye.
Representative Nolan?
Yes.
Representative Lynn?
Aye.
Representative Rosenbaum?
Aye.
Chair Anderson?
Chair votes aye. House Bill 3328 has been moved to the Budget Committee with a due pass recommendation. So that will close the work session on House 3328, and we are through, so we will adjourn, and I wish you all a very, very safe and happy weekend.